Hello and welcome to the Tech on Toast podcast. My name's Chris Fletcher and I'm your host. Tech on Toast exists to connect hospitality to technology. Search for your best problem-solving tech on our marketplace, listen to both operators and tech experts on our podcast, or just meet up with the brilliant people who are helping innovate the hospitality industry as we enter a new era. Welcome to Tech on Toast. The Tech on Toast podcast is brought today by Point One. Point One offers the complete EPOS system for your hospitality business. From mobile order and pay and self-serve kiosks to restaurant and kitchen management, Point One has the solution. Head over to their website today to find out more and get in touch with their experienced team. Enjoy the show. Hi, guys. Welcome to the next episode of Tech on Toast. I'm delighted to be joined by Steve Phillips, Operations Director from Marigami. Steve, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you? Glad to be here.
I'm good. I was just commenting about you being in the gym and making me feel bad. How was that?
Not the gym. A dark room... with a few weights in
kitchen.
It.
That'd be weird.
In East London with my PT, but it's cheap and he's good.
Sounds like my bin man. I don't quite have the same effect. And Marigami, I think Kieran knew you before I do and were chatting to you about various things before that. But Marigami, when it arrived, was so exciting, wasn't it? I mean, just the nature of that brand and what you had to do. Because it was during the pandemic, right? When you're actually brought on board, you were sitting, I remember talking to you on a virtual meeting or something, and you were talking about tech and you were talking about building the tech stack and whatnot. But it was such an exciting time for you, because you were sent away, weren't you? Not in a bad way.
Oh, there's a Taiwan story.
Yes.
Basically we had to take this brand that is synonymous in Japan.
Yeah. How many sites do they have? Like
1,200 across the world, over 1,200 across the world, 700, 800 in Japan.
I think, and you just don't get that here, do you? You don't understand the size of it here when you look at Marigami.
For sure.
Now popping up everywhere, but you just don't understand the breadth of that business.
Yeah, absolutely massive. I mean, it's Marigami is known more, recognized more on the brand advocacy polls that happens in Japan, like they do here.
Yeah.
Above Apple, above Disney. I know this is a very important brand to Japanese people. So it was a pandemic. We had a brand that we had to Europeanize or anglicize to start with. And they'd done some franchising, but not lots and lots of it.
Yeah.
They certainly didn't have the McDonald's style perfect manual. There you go. So we had to sort of work our way through that. On Teams, in my bedroom, with my missus trying to work in another room, who ended up working on Marigami accidentally. So we lived and breathed it for a while. And I couldn't get into Japan. So I'm sort of watching these videos and reading these endless ways of working documents, how to's and so on and so forth. And all an operator wants to do is just get stuck in and understand what they've got to reproduce, right?
And when you look at it now, so you've got, how many sites have you got now in the UK?
11.
11. So when you look at it now compared to what you were thinking about in that period when you're doing your Teams calls, is it what you imagined? And we're going to talk about everything in between, but is it what you thought it would feel like, I suppose?
From the early days, so hard to remember, but I think so. I think we knew we had there's an American market, and the American market we knew was going to be much more like our market.
Yeah.
So from that, we knew it was going to be cool. We knew it was going to have high energy, and it was going to be sort of disruptive or a new product.
Yeah, it's going to arrive, isn't it?
Done it in a different way.
Yeah.
How successful it was going to be, we had no idea.
You just don't know, especially coming out of the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
Because nobody knew. I mean, there was no like-for-like, nothing out of the box. It was all, let's start again.
The world was weird anyway.
Yeah.
And then here we come with this canteen thing with this noodle that was, lots of people would say, the kind of worm ones. Yeah, that's it.
Put that on the bottom.
The big thick ones. And here, people still really don't understand what a noodle is. Understandably, it's just not been big enough. And just like I liken it to Jamie's Italian. When Jamie's Italian did fresh pasta, yeah. Everyone was like, oh my God, this pasta is so much better than, you know, all those other chains or the stuff I get from Tesco's or whatever. It's exactly the same as udon. People know it from packets.
Yeah.
And certain other brands do a dish or two. And it's, you know, that's from packets. And it's just so different. It's just a completely different product.
It was an education. It's an education piece as well as just doing all the other stuff, which we'll talk about in a second.
Yeah.
You're having to educate your customers, right? Brand new.
That's it. So, back to the other story. So, what I had to do is the only way I could get into market was to go to Taiwan, and I could go to Taiwan on a business visa. So it's mid pandemic. Japan wouldn't let anybody in, you know, whatever, at all. Most of Asia wasn't. Taiwan would let you in on a two, on a business visa. But so it was all set up through the company. Oh, you're going to go to Taiwan, it's on a business visa. Okay, cool. Yeah, you've got to do 2 weeks quarantine. okay, you know, what? It's in a hotel. Okay, that'll be all right. Yeah, okay, you know, and then after that, you do 2.5-3 weeks in the market. So, I thought, okay, crack on. It was, you know, it's been the pandemic, so go to Taiwan for 4 weeks, that's cool.
Yeah.
I got on the plane, everyone's full hazmat, you know, all of that jazz going on. Got off the plane, we were marched off the plane with the army. literally with the army, brought into a room in the arrivals hall. We were stamped, tagged, all of that, scanned. I had a barcode. I think I had a number for a while.
You are just a barcode.
Put on a bus, and this bus carried on driving and carried on driving and carried on driving. And I was meeting somebody else from Japan, and he'd arrived about an hour or so before me. And I was like, oh, how's it going? Yeah, cool. I'm somewhere in Taipei, downtown in a cool hotel. I can order Uber Eats. It's all gravy. I was like, brilliant. This is going to be no problem.
Yeah. 2 weeks off in a hotel.
After 45 minutes on this bus, I was like, I don't think I'm in downtown. I'm going up hills and the road's winding. All right, okay, this is getting weird. Looking out the window, it's dark. I've landed at night, it's dark. I'm looking out the window, I'm thinking, I can see the lights of Taipei in the background. I put location tracker on my phone and send it to my missus, going, I don't know where I'm going.
Just in case I don't see you again.
You might want to watch me for a while. And we ended up right up at the top of the hills above Taipei, in this inverted commas hotel. It turned out it was a dormitory. You know, that students weren't using. I went in again, tagged, scanned, put into this room, and I can only describe, I mean, get over myself because it wasn't that bad, right? But I walked in, you know, green sheets, a bed, a desk. oh my God. So
no Uber Eats.
No Uber Eats, no communication with the outside. Can't go out. Couldn't leave the room for two weeks. Great internet, saving grace. Three times a day, a gong went off and a meal was put outside your door.
Oh,
and that was me for two weeks.
Sounds like my house, actually, to be fair with the kids.
Wow. So it was all right. I arrived at the weekend. So I kind of, once I got over the weekend, then I had the first week. And because of the time differences, I basically got up and did a sort of Japan day, training online and various bits and pieces. And then by 4 or 5 o'clock, it was the beginning of the UK day. So that kept me going well into the evening. So I was busy, you know, online. And then,
I can see how you made well of that situation.
Yeah.
I mean, look, and I think after we've known you for a while and we've watched that brand grow, actually, and it's been super exciting. And one of the things you were tasked to do, one of the things we first spoke to you about, and the reason I wanted you to come on today was really talk about the fact that you had to build a tech stack in a pandemic, in a brand you couldn't visualize, now I know, in a dorm in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
But how do you approach that? I mean, because we've talked a lot about tech and you told me some kind of rules you have, I suppose, when you're buying tech. But how did you approach building that tech stack? I mean, what were you buying? What's the plan?
So I think we started with, Keith coined the phrase, our CEO, we want to be fast followers, not trailblazers, you know, and I think that was a really good kind of basic way of grounding what we did, because we didn't want to try something out. It was too risky, you know. Yeah. We hoped that volume would be there, so we didn't want to get sort of caught out on that. So we started with a paperless mentality, and we're pretty much still, I think we learned along the way that some things really do need to be in people's hands. Yes. And tactile. But you know, we don't have printers in sight. We don't have any, you know, kitchen monitoring paperwork or anything like that. So it all remained paperless. That was a key attribute, and referenceable.
Yeah,
you know, we made sure everything was referenceable. There was a lot of great stuff going on, but was it in somewhere and referenceable?
Yeah.
Again, another colleague, I'll save his name, but he said to me about a certain company, they've got the greatest sales force in the UK. They're not the greatest in the UK, so they appear to be fantastic. And actually, when I then tried to reference that business on the particular product I was trying to talk to them about, you couldn't. Some of their other products were amazing,
yeah,
but you just couldn't reference them on this product.
And you're right. I mean, why go into that process when you're building a brand new brand, brand new people, and you're trying to impress both inwardly and outwardly? It's a complex situation.
Yeah.
And then having tech that doesn't really... Well, you just don't know. It's too risky, right?
That's it. And it's cool to do cool new stuff, but you've got to be... Why do that with a opening, you know, with a brand new thing? So... you know, there's a time and place for it, I think, and landing a brand wasn't that. But at the same time, we didn't want to just go automatically with the dinosaurs and the stuff that hadn't evolved.
Yeah, and what were you buying? So you're buying PARS, pretty much everything.
I mean, importantly for us was to we wanted, because the paperless, actually, when you think about that, it really does go on and on and on. So no menus, digital menus, which is obviously fairly normal for QSR type businesses, and we consider ourselves a sort of a fast casual rather than somewhere between a QSR and a casual business. So we were buying a people system with an end to end, so an ATS through to hours being recorded and paid, a POS system, a CRM / loyalty system. Anything that made paperwork digital, so kitchen paperwork monitoring, fridge monitoring, so on and so forth. So yeah, all the feedback system.
Yeah.
So anything that you would normally either have to write or attach.
And everyone's probably asking. And did they all integrate? I mean, was that one of your? You're smiling. did they all talk to each other? Or did they need to talk to each other? I suppose all of them.
The equipment or the people or both?
Well, no, do you know what? Because I come at it from a very agnostic point of view, right? Where I'm thinking, I know I've got an operational head like you. I spent a lot of time doing that myself. And I think that you can buy all the gear and it can all integrate technologically. But then also in your scenario, you're opening and you're installing everything at once, right? You're pretty much rolling out all the kit with a site.
Yeah.
Sounds horrific. So normally when you buy a bit of tech, you're putting it into an existing brand that's, you know, got 10 sites, 20 sites, 50 sites, whatever. But your case was different. So are you alluding to the fact that the relationships between the actual tech owners or the people who work together, they maybe weren't joined up as much as they could be?
Yeah, definitely. I think everyone's looking after their sort of own world a little bit, and that's understandable. But I think... I did it. I'm not technical. I did it from a pure operations point of view. I knew what needed to happen.
Yeah.
I kind of understand how things attach to each other and how it works, but from a possibility point of view, not from a technical point of view. Worked with a chap called Anson that helped us.
Who's very smart.
Very, very smart chap, and helped, you know, basically I could say to him in my knuckle-dragging operations language, I want this, do this, please. And he would say, yeah, it can do that. This is what we need to do.
Yeah.
So that's how it worked. And effectively what we then did, and we definitely dangled the, we are from a PLC company in Japan with 1,200 sites.
Yes.
You know, do you want to be on board with this? And that helped.
I bet.
And it shouldn't. That's the sad thing about that. It really shouldn't. I understand, you know, the size of the opportunity, but effectively it shouldn't. It shouldn't mean that you can do something all of a sudden would have said no to before.
We were having dinner in Market Halls last week, and we were with your friend Budgie.
Yep.
And we were talking, weren't we, about tech for those people who are coming. Maybe they're in their, maybe they're in an incubator, they're in sessions, they're in market halls, wherever, and they're coming out, and they should get the same opportunity that you got at Marugame. Right?
So passionate about that. Yeah. Exactly that. And they just don't, and they just get their no, or they just get their yeah, you can buy a product, and that's that.
Yeah. So you get customer success, you get all the guys, you get the founder probably popping down to see.
Exactly that. And so we ended up with this this second sort of project or phase, project name, which was One Plate of Truth. Kind of come from one place of truth, right? But we want everything to come from one place. So we want, if we got to enter detail, menu detail, prices, out of stock something, should be able to do it in one place, and that should go to everywhere. So I held One Plate of Truth meetings where all the representatives from the various tech companies had to come onto a call and had to talk to each other. And basically all I did was say, you talk to you, you know, none of this happens without everyone collaborating.
I love that.
And it worked. We got there. Some led the way.
And I think you're totally right that everyone's got their own end in mind, right? Because they're all got their own business, their own day-to-day stuff going on. But I think one of the things that I would talk to suppliers about actually is that remembering that hospitality is very different and the expectations are very different, and actually what you care about your customer and their experience in your team, full stop, the end, and that's it. And I think is that shift sometimes in their journey where they have to kind of put themselves back in your shoes. And I think that's where the experience of having hospitality people in tech businesses makes a huge difference, just from language to
enormous understanding. I mean, tech guys, stop stalking people on LinkedIn. Stop sending blind emails. Stop, you know, calling or even trying to trick you. You know, I was speaking to your colleague and, you know, it's just such a bad way to go about
things. We got an email yesterday from an event that happened recently, a big event last week, saying, oh, sorry we missed you at the event. Can we catch up this week? We're like, we weren't even there, mate. You're on last year's database.
It's just
be better, isn't it, at that kind of stuff. So
it's just so cynical, and it doesn't need to be. And the thing is, we, you know, everyone recommends in something. No one in this business really goes through a catalogue and says, oh, I'll have that. It always comes with a recommendation. If they're sensible, it'll come with a reference. So just look after your customers. Really make sure that they're cool, and you know, don't forget the people actually operate in your tech, so that, you know, don't keep the CEO suite or people like me suite, keep the manager suite that's using the piece of technology that you're selling.
It's so key, isn't it? I mean, I'm so pleased you said that, because actually that's one of the things I advocate a lot, that me and Kieran used to do events all the time, right? And everyone say, oh, why don't you go for founders and CEOs? Why are you always going for this mid-level people? No one wants to come and hear them talk. I'm like, because they're the people doing it. They're the ones in the business doing it day to day. They're the people touching your screens that you're selling, or the people running the Zed report at the end of the day, whatever it might be. They're the guys that will kick you out, not the CEO. The CEO is the last guy
who'll kick you out. All the CEO do, all I do is I say to the operators, to the managers, how can I help? What doesn't work? What's rubbish about your technology? What can I improve? Or what do you think of it? And if another business is coming along, and I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm thinking of changing this, they'll either beg me to change it, or they'll say, no, leave it, it's great.
The thing, and you don't, quiet tech is the best tech, right? So if you don't hear about it as an ops director, if you don't hear about it,
amazing.
You just know. Well, you don't even think about it, right? You move on to the next thing. It's gone. And where you're hearing about it every day, it's like this drip, 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 like in your ear. It's game over, pretty much, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly. I think the size of the pie is big enough for everyone. Just concentrate on your customers and let the referral thing do its thing. Unless, of course, you don't believe in your product and you know, it really isn't going to last. And I kind of get it. Go, you know, every moment of glory if you can.
Wow. Okay. And one of the things you did say when we were talking about Budgie. So what's Budgie's brand called? Sorry, stop calling it Budgie because no one knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, Apoy. So he's a great chap. A very typical one of the, you know, he's actually a self-taught chef and he's worked at Michelin level, Australian Filipino, and come to the UK after checking in an accounts or something behind a desk anyway in Melbourne, I think.
He looks like a chef.
Yeah, very much so. He's come to the UK, self-taught himself, worked in some great restaurants. Michelin star level restaurant, and basically it's like championing Filipino food, which is very close to my heart. My wife is half Filipino, and we I've just helped him along the way with just advice and I just like him. I like what he does. I like his food.
But they're exciting, right? Aren't they?
These great.
I was in there the other night with you. We were walking around having a look, and it is just exciting seeing these guys, because I think. I mean, I want to ask you about it, actually. What do you think that's where the new Maragami is going to come from? I know there's VC-backed and all this kind of stuff that happens, will always happen. But when you look at these boys and girls growing stuff out of these incubator programs, do you think that's the future? Do you think we're going to see these guys in the high street?
I really hope so, because I think that's where great stuff's happening and where innovation's happening and where amazing products are coming from. And the problem is these guys still can't break in. You know, the landlords are better, I think, but I don't think it's still not accessible to get into a cool site. So they're really relying on their branding and building a brand and getting a little bit lucky with an influencer or something like that. You know, it's so hard. I don't know this world, but I liken it to what I hear about, you know, trying to break through the music world. Lots of great singers out there, but you know, and you've got to keep plugging away, but you also got to get a massive master stroke of luck because there's not enough.
Does delivery help that, do you think, or not? I mean, because obviously you can get outside the four walls and you can reach more people, but is it, because I know the business model is tough, right, with delivery, because your margins are squeezed.
Yeah, for startup guys, probably not.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you probably, I think delivery works great when it's cream on top of cream on top, right?
Yeah.
But also, I believe, and I think this is why the dark brands and these kind of guys, you know, can struggle. People still want to know that they're ordering from a physical thing. Like they want to recognize the brand. They want to know what it is. I've done some bits and pieces in the past where we've done some dark brand stuff with other businesses. And done some great stuff, amazing product. But they just, people are like, I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I don't get it.
And the trust just isn't there. So when you've got bricks and mortar and they know who you are and then on delivery they can reconcile that, I think it helps. So if you're a startup, lots of people still won't know who you are. So the delivery element doesn't massively help. And of course, the delivery companies come along and go, yeah, it's rack rate, mate. And that doesn't help either.
Yeah, there's no negotiation there, is there?
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the other things you mentioned, actually, which I quoted to a supplier last week, was consistency. And we were talking about features and all the great things that tech can do, but you were like, nah, the most important thing to me was, are we on?
Yeah, uptime.
Yeah.
Number one. I mean, what's the point in having an EPOS system that can do brush your teeth for you in the morning if it's not working? You know, it's just got to be uptime, reliability, consistency. Like you say, if it's not on, if it's not in your mind because it's just working,
then it's
doing a great job.
It really is that simple, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know that's not how suppliers probably listen and go, what? I know it's not simple. I understand the complexities of tech entirely. But again, putting it back in the operator's shoes, you just care about it being on.
Yeah, yeah. And some people, you know, just get the shiny penny syndrome, right? Oh, that looks nice. I'll go and have a look at that. We just don't need to, just don't do that. just stay focused.
No, but that's true, isn't it? When you were talking about the referencing people, that actually it's, and I did a survey of Tech on Toast, which I will release at some point. I talk about it every week. It'll be out next month. Let's say next month. But 82% of people like you, actually, who filled out the survey, said they would buy from recommendation rather than a trade show, I think, was like 12% or something. And it just shows that the industry's very small. Although it's very big, it's in terms of decision-making, it's quite small, isn't it? You're talking a couple of 300 people in the, I don't know, like who run brands, who sign a check.
Yeah,
so I think it is difficult to sell into.
It's trust, right? And it's not the cost of the tech you're buying; it's the cost of it going wrong, or the cost of it not doing its job. Yeah. So you know, if you're, like we were, you know, you've been handed lots of millions of pounds to launch a brand. You don't want to get that wrong.
No.
So you've got to be confident that you're going with the right people. And look, we didn't get it all right. We got a lot of our stack right. There was one actually fairly major part. And guess what? It's when we broke our own rule that it actually went wrong and we had to replace that sort of 18 months in.
And was that down to not referencing it, or was it...
We referenced it. I'd say the rule we broke was it wasn't in QSR stroke casual.
Right.
The product wasn't in there. It was in other types of businesses. And this business was going to sort of pivot to be able to work with us to do our style.
Yeah.
And they just couldn't.
It's really interesting, that one plate of truth thing. If I was a supplier listening and I'd been thinking, do you know what? Next week's meeting, sprint, whatever it's going to be, I'm going to sit there and talk about actually understanding, can we, you know, how do we work with our partners? And I know everyone works together, which is great. And actually, since the pandemic, that's improved hugely. I think people are much more willing to work together. But really understanding what you want from your business or what you want. And Marigami is a different project because it's brand new. But you were buying tech in Bisabra, I presume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not quite the same. It certainly didn't have the same stack. It was more probably about renewing, replacing,
yes.
that kind of stuff. But look, I mean, my advice would be, whether it's you're starting from scratch or whether it's in the middle, you're looking for a renewal program, invite the, you know, do your work, get to the where you think you've got your best people for each piece of tech, invite them to one meeting in person round a table preferably, and if they say no, they're probably not the right partner for you.
Yeah, I love that, and I'm just sitting there thinking that should be happening. Supplier, because networking is great and it's great for meeting people, but actually doing some supplier tech stack round table type things would be awesome, right?
Yeah, get one of each, and if the guy from the people system says no, I'd rather not, go and look at different people systems, see what that guy says or that girl says. You know, easy.
Yeah, I love it. And you've been operating a while. I mean, we talked about frustrations a little bit. Is it really just down to that? Is it down to really what your people are saying in terms of whether it's working or not? Is that your biggest frustrations you had? I mean, we talked about it a bit already. I think I've already covered that. We've done it, haven't we?
Is what
frustrations around technology, your biggest frustrations?
I think it is the lack of working together and the lack of customer care that can come. This particular product that we had to change, not only was the product not working, but the customer care was, obviously I won't go into the company was, but the customer care was a struggle. And a really good example of that is I phoned the MD founder and I said, look, this is really not good for us. I need you to come down and I need you to talk through various bits and pieces. No problem. It's £1,000 a day.
Wow.
For me to come and tell you, I'm basically saying, come and save your contract because this is really not going well. Well, I can help you, but it's £1,000 a day.
Okay. Next time you ring me, I'm going to say the same to you. Steve, for me to talk to you, even give you a FaceTime. No, 500 quid, mate.
It's the most bizarre, it was an email. It was the most bizarre email I've ever received.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice touch. I mean, actually, on customer care, because, again, a lot of suppliers will listen to this, what do you expect? So is there a level of service, like you want in white glove type service, or are you happy just to be, if you need them, they're there?
We're hospitality people, right? Be human with us. That's it.
Talk our language.
Talk. Just don't have an agenda. Be honest. I think we're quite robust people in this industry. So if you say, do you know what, that's not quite working how it's going to be, I'm going to sort it for you, but it's definitely not broke.
It's going to take 4 weeks.
It's broke. Yeah. Cool. We can deal with that.
Yes.
We've just had a fairly major issue, with one of our suppliers, and they've handled it pretty well, pretty honestly. It was pretty major for us, but communication was all there, and we worked through it.
Yeah. It's so simple. Again, it's just this simple, like, don't hide, don't lie, and just tell us what you're going to do.
Yeah, exactly that. You know, why? Well, we've got customers to serve. Why would we get too stuck into worrying about what's going? If you're going to get on with it and you're going to be honest with us, then and we've got a good relationship, then we'll go back to serving our customers and looking after our team. And you know, we'll see
we'll
you.
We'll find
in 4
a way,
weeks.
Right? Operators just find a way. When things break, we've been running off paper and pens for years, right?
Exactly.
No problem. We can go and do that for a few weeks. It doesn't matter. Yes, it's a pain, but we can do it. So it's just about that relationship piece is key, isn't it? Communication's a key.
Yeah, and don't do the taxis around the corner thing. That's just so annoying, right? Just the, it'll be all right tomorrow. Oh, no, next day. Oh, no, next week.
I heard that last night, actually. Yeah. 5 minutes, mate. And what about, so on a positive note, tech's enabled you to do your role over the last 5 years. What particularly have you found has really helped in terms of automation or in terms of support that you've had? What's really helped you to kind of do your job, I suppose, as an ops director?
Data, knowledge, insights, good decision making because of it. Time back in some instances.
That's a big selling, right? Time back. I mean, a lot of people talk. Do you actually get it? Because I can imagine how you would when I look at the tech that the guys are selling. Does it? Do you get the time back, or do you end up just spending it, wasting it somewhere else?
It's very easy, right, to get all this tech and then have to sit there and look at all this tech and analyze it and see what it's telling you.
Yeah.
But again, I think good stuff just gets on with it and does its thing, and you know it's doing its thing, and then you can crack on with the basics. I mean, it never changes, right? You're going to sit with your, I sit with my operators each week, and we talk about people, and we talk about sales, and we talk about cost of sales, and we talk about labor.
That's never changed, right? That's never changed.
I mean, it's
but you're right. I think you have more power in your hand, right, or in your reporting, or whatever it might be role.
It's the I tell you what good tech does, and it may be a little bit un-PC, but you can
do it
when you, when you get the I smell BS. You've got somewhere to go to see if your instinct is right, rather than letting it be weeks and weeks and weeks, or you've got to yourself go and do a couple of different visits to see if your instinct is right. 9 times out of 10, if the tech is right and your instinct is there that something's not right, the tech will probably tell you whether your instinct's right or wrong.
We get there a lot quicker.
Yeah, you get there quicker for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of tech. This, particularly the last 2 or 3 years, I think, or 4 years, I suppose, since the pandemic, that actually the explosion of it, there's been some very quick make it and sell it tech, but then there's been some cracking stuff come through, which has really developed nicely over the last few years and is really enabling people like you.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
I've got to ask you, so we're running out of time. You ran a marathon last year, didn't you? Was it last year?
Last year.
You're laughing. You go in the gym, you're running marathons, you're some superhuman ops director.
I spent many of my years well over 100 kilos. So,
I imagine your chefing years you might be referring to.
And area manager years. They're the worst.
Yeah, they are. In the car, just eating crisps.
Red Bull and pasties.
It's embarrassing, isn't it, how we lived?
Yeah.
Especially if you're out of London, right? Because I was in the southwest and Midlands and Manchester, whatever. And you end up just going to the Shell garage. I'm embarrassed to admit this.
Yeah.
You go to the Shell garage and you fill up a bottle of Coke, some Pringles,
Percy
sausage
pigs.
Roll, Percy pigs.
There's something to keep you awake on the M4.
And then you'd shovel them down your throat while you're doing a 3-hour drive to Dorchester.
That was exactly
hospitality.
That was exactly it.
Anyway, sorry. Yeah.
So I got to the marathons. I did decide I need to get a bit more healthy. I would never have dreamt of doing anything like running a marathon. And I come out, actually, all side of the pandemic. So in the pandemic, I think people went one way or the other, right?
Yeah.
And we were also, how do we entertain our team? And Joe Wicks was doing his thing.
Didn't think Joe Wicks was going to appear today, but carry on.
Yeah. I don't think I knew who he was before the pandemic, right?
I don't think anyone did his
I was watching him the other day. It's a bit odd now, I think.
Fame's got to him.
I've got so many inappropriate thoughts. I'm going to stop. And I thought, I don't know what I'll do. We had our commercial manager, who's a chef in Basaba, do a cook-along thing, and all these people doing quizzes. And I was like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do one of these Joe Wicks 7-minute hit things, but I'm going to do it for a laugh, right? Because it's basically going to be this 108-kilo dude on Instagram Live every morning trying to do a 7-minute hit thing. So from a comedy point of view, that will keep the team interested. they'll be engaged and they'll have a bit of a laugh and whatever else. And sure enough, the first couple of weeks, it was me falling flat on my face, sweating like an absolute pig. My missus recording it and taking a piss out of me. And then I thought, I'm getting a bit stronger and a bit fitter at this. And it sort of carried on. And then once I got back to work proper, I've sort of worked all the way through the pandemic, but once I got back into Marigami and whatever else was going on, I knew that work would take over, as it's done in the years prior. So I needed something, and I thought, right, going to run a marathon. And actually, I attempted the year before.
Yes, that's right.
I did my back in. I don't need to warm down. I'll just go straight to work. Yeah, you do need to warm down.
Apparently so.
Otherwise, you end up on your back in bed for a week. So the second attempt, I did it properly. I run walked for the last 8 miles, I think. But I got round.
Massive kudos, you did it. Yeah. Before we started.
Had a burger at the end of it. It was all good.
I was talking about how little I do, but yeah, it's interesting. And I think it's really important. I mean, I don't want to get too much into it now, but the mental health side of things for what you guys do in the industries, particularly with the pressure you face, just, you know, the nature of the business is quite high pressure. It must help, right? Just to be able to release doing something.
Everyone tells you it can. I still know lots of people that just don't buy into it. You will do better work if you find the balance of looking after yourself. And actually, in particular, in hospitality, it's all about people. And you're leading people. Yeah. You're the person that builds teams that they look to, that hopefully inspires people, and so on and so forth. If you are, you know, are not kind to yourself and don't look after yourself, then you won't be able to give anything to anybody. And you know, I heard it for how many years, and it just changed my life, I think. And just trying to, I mean, I'm no
that's why I like your story, because it's real. As it, you can, from my sitting in my chair, I can do what you've done, because you know, I've done what you do, and actually I think, oh, it's achievable, because
Steve, we were just talking. Right?
Steve can be arsed doing it, then I should be.
I still don't want to get my belly out. It's not pretty. I'll just try and keep it tight in the week. And my missus' birthday this weekend, we're going to go away and we're just going to eat and drink, and that's all we'll do for 3 days.
Very nice.
But then, you know, get
there
back.
There you go. We've turned this into a fit.
Oh yeah, I've turned into Joe Wicks. Damn.
Steve Phillips. I was going to ask you about the future. Are you going to get a headband? Are you going to be on telly a lot? Or what?
Definitely not.
So what is next for Marigami, I suppose, and what's next for Steve?
Well, education on udon. I think that's it, right? I mean, look, we've got a couple of really sweet peachy sites coming up that we can't talk about yet.
In London or out?
One in, one out. Ooh, okay. In terms of the two of the really, really good sites that I'm really excited about, and a bunch of other stuff in the pipeline. We are, property goes in waves, I think, and we're finding at the moment there's a good opportunity just to sort of review everything, look at all our operating systems. We get ready for franchising. It's always been, we're the master franchisee for Europe, so we've always looked to sub-franchise, so that's kind of happening, and we're preparing for that. I think really it's this product, making people understand what this product is. That's our biggest challenge. We definitely have a, what are they, who are they, what do they do? You don't go and sit down.
But even when you open up, when I was opening Carluccio's all over the country, even when you open a Carluccio's in Bristol and you've got 70 already in the UK, you still get that, but you've got it even more, right? Because you're still in Europe anyway, or in the UK extreme wise, you've got, you know, 10, 11. So yeah, it just makes it harder, doesn't it, to do that?
Yeah, for sure.
It's great, if you haven't been in, you need to go in. It's great fun, isn't it? The atmosphere, the energy, the food is fantastic.
Great value, fresh food, udon made in front of you, loads of energy, freshly fried tempura. You walk down the line, you know, you're in and out in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
If you, in terms of getting your food, sitting down, eating and leaving. And lunch for under a tenner. We have bowls of udon in kake broth, which is basically a very light fish broth, which you could eat every day. It's so light, so nutritious, really. I've turned into our marketing director, I think.
That's good. That's the future.
Forget the price now, but under a fiver for the bowl.
I remember when you first told us the price, we were like, you're mad. But actually, it makes real sense, doesn't it? When you go and eat, it's just a cracking venue. And I think what I like about it is it really fits. We were talking about the new way of eating, and I know QSR has been around a while, but actually, It's a great way to spin into. You can spin it into your day really easily.
Yeah.
Like you can drop in, drop out. But if you want to spend longer, you can, right?
Definitely. I think I mean, certain venues lend themselves to an evening vibe. And again, that doesn't really happen in other markets. We purposely angled it at the evenings. You know, nicer lighting, music, bit cooler, decent alcohol offering, that kind of thing. So, you know, some tempura, forget the udon, on an evening, catching up with some mates, a few tempura and a couple of asahis, what's not to like?
Nothing, that's lush. Anyway, we have to end. But Steve, look, if people want to get hold of you and find out about Marigame, don't even start about udon noodle. That's not for this podcast, that's getting guts. If people want to find out about you and Marigame, where can they find you?
In restaurants.
Speaking to tech people.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm on steve.phillips@marigame.co.uk. Yeah, drop me a line. Be more, especially anyone thinking, just want to reference something. Yep. I need someone that I can rely on. I think Marigame use it. I'd be more than happy to have a conversation.
And I'd say to any operators, suppliers listening, you're more than happy, right, to share your experience and know-how around what you've been doing, you know, and just add your 5p in the meter.
For sure. And obviously I'll tell everyone, you know, good, bad, ugly, and what, where, why. And that is exactly the point I was making earlier, is that if you can find someone like me and then reference it, then you're probably in a good place.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's the whole point of the community of Tech on Toast is to involve people like yourselves with the suppliers in the space where they feel like actually we can share information a bit more openly and it's not such a bad thing to talk about problems or good things.
Yeah, so. Definitely.
Lovely. All right, mate. Thank
Great
you very
stuff.
Much.
Thanks
Appreciate
for having
coming
me.
In. Back to the gym. I'm going to have a burger.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.